I think we're going to get into the actual, you know, first week of the course then. So, you know, we know people haven't necessarily been able to go through the online module this week. Please do go through it in the next couple of days. But as I said sort of at the beginning, you know, the goal here, both for the course and a little bit for today, is really talking about a general approach to data. We're not trying to focus on, you know, particular data sets, though we'll obviously be focusing mostly on HIV, but we're trying to think through the approach to data and how to see what data are showing and not showing, and how what the data show and what they don't show and who's included in the data and who's not included in the data changes how we can think about how to utilize those data. This means focusing on aspects of data that make data robust or susceptible to criticism. And those are pieces that we really want to focus on because they allow us to approach any data set and start asking questions about its utility. It also allows us to ask questions, you know, of PEPFAR or of Global Fund or other domestic policymakers about how they're utilizing data and whether they're utilizing the data correctly, according to how the data were collected, according to who's in those data and who's not in those data. So there's a few different things that make data data. I think everyone encompasses identified, obviously, the importance of utilizing data to drive our advocacy efforts. What we're really trying to do here for part of this is develop a common vocabulary around data. Some of this is basic, some of it's really hard, and some of it is nuanced, and you'll see that in the online module in particular. But what makes data data is really sort of, and what strengthens data is really sort of these three different pieces, being systematically collected, being representative, and being reproducible. And I think the one thing for people to understand and really in terms of interpreting and understanding data is that data is really just a collection of different observations. They're individual observations that we're recording. And that's true regardless of whether it's big clinical trials, it's true whether it's community-led monitoring programs, it's true whether it's completely outside of health and we're talking about particle physics. Everything is just sort of a collection of different observations. The point about good quality data being systematically collected, being representative, and being reproducible is that those are the features of data, the features of the way that we collect those observations that make the data good quality or bad quality. So systematically collected means, you know, these are not once-off events. We didn't just go ask one person or we didn't just go look at one event. We've collected, or we didn't only collect only a subset of the data of observations, but we went through and we collected every observation that we were able to identify. It's not a filtered set of events or experiences, and we're trying to represent every observed event or experience. This is important because it makes it a lot less easy for people to dismiss the data. It's the difference between a group of people making complaints about services or infrastructure and documenting how widespread those issues are for every person who interacts with the health services. As importantly, it helps us understand the issues we're dealing with better. There's countless stories of trying to respond to crises, but responding in the wrong way because we misunderstood the problem. Being systematic in data collection helps us to be much more certain about what we're seeing and what we're not seeing in the data. Representative. The point of being representative speaks to how well the data incorporate experiences and observations that are not directly included in the data. For instance, if we ask 1,000 women about their experiences accessing healthcare, that may be representative for the experiences of women, but won't necessarily be representative of the experiences of men. Likewise, conducting a survey of patients only in urban hospitals won't be representative of the experiences of people in rural health facilities. There's a lot of what researchers do to try and control for this. One of the other issues that comes up with representativeness is bias in data. So bias in data is when you're collecting data and there's a flaw in the way you're collecting data, or there's some unintended feature about the way that the data end up being collected. And researchers spend a lot of time trying to root out data, but it's root out bias in data collection. But it's virtually impossible to root out all bias entirely. And so just being cognizant of what's happening within data is really important, and what potential biases are there. Importantly, bias isn't inherently bad. Sometimes, you know, we intend to do research that's biased. What's different about that is how we then utilize those data. So if we are intending to do research on women's views of healthcare systems, asking only women will give us a biased data set towards women's views. But that only means that it shouldn't be used to represent the views of men. We also talk about this a lot in PEPFAR regarding disaggregations by sex and age and key population. Looking at, as sort of Austin introduced, the disaggregations are important for understanding how representative the results are across the total population and whether there are different groups of people that are being left behind in the process. And then reproducible. Reproducible is an incredibly important feature of data collection and of science in general. Any data should be able to be reproduced. You should be able to talk about the way that you collected data, the way that you went out and chose facilities to monitor, chose people to interview. You should be able to speak to how all of these were done. So if you're doing a survey, who did we ask, and how did we select those that we were going to ask? What were the specific questions that we were asking? In what setting were those questions asked? Were they group interviews or were they individual interviews? All of those things are important to describe in terms of the methodology, because if somebody else wants to go out and repeat gathering data in the way that you said you did, they need to know, how did you do this? Because the way that you gather data will skew how the way that the answers come out. So these three elements are relatively simple conceptually, but they are some of the biggest challenges that researchers have when analyzing and utilizing data. And there are things that we need to watch out for whenever we approach a data set. Neutrality of data is also very important. This is another concept in sort of the way that we do data collection. The method by which data are being collected and the representativeness of it are about collecting information that's neutral on its face. You know, data themselves don't have any sort of political meaning. They don't have any really meaning on their own. And the point is, your question should be designed, and the way that you're gathering data should be designed to be neutral on its face. That said, the act of collecting data can be a political act, and it can be very meaningful. And we all know that. That's part of advocacy, and that's part of what community-led monitoring does. It lets people know that the community is monitoring, and that alone can improve outcomes for people. But still, the goal with the methodology of data is really to collect data that are neutral, and get to the way that we can answer questions when we're trying to then analyze the data later. So I wanna talk about just this one example that we're gonna go through today, and it's in the online module a little bit, about a school sanitation campaign that was run in South Africa and is still an ongoing problem. So this was a school sanitation program looking at the quality of sanitation services at a number of schools, particularly in Limpopo. And we think this is a really powerful, because of the approach to data that they used, the types of data that they gathered, the way they presented the data is really useful as an advocacy effort. And I think it's a really useful way to think through the different pieces that we just introduced, the systematic data, the representativeness of the data, and the reproducibility of the data. So in this part, I'm hoping we're gonna be interactive. So unmute yourselves, raise hands, speak up. I know it's Compass, so we're not that shy. Use the chat feature, but I'm going to be asking a number of questions here going forward. So this is, you know, this is the first piece of data that is presented in the way the school sanitation program really introduced their assessment. And I want to go through this. So what they did, and there's a couple of different things on this slide that Section 27 and the school sanitation program was looking at. So they say, I think, three different things in this slide that's important for us to think through. First, they say they collected data on 86 schools in Limpopo province. And they say, of the 86 schools, they grouped them into five different categories: blue, green, yellow, orange, and red. They also showed this map of where all of those schools that were visited in the province are. And we're talking about data being systematic, representative, and reproducible. How does this start, you know, this slide start to address those initial questions about data? Can someone volunteer to speak to that? How did these three pieces of information that you just got, you've got the map, you've got that they went to 86 different schools in Limpopo, and you've got these five different categories. How do those fit into what we just talked about data being systematic, representative, and reproducible? Anyone want to volunteer? Let's just think about being systematic.
Sorry, go ahead. Who was that?
I just wanted to repeat the question. Can you please repeat the question so that I can get it?
Yeah, so the question is, we've got three pieces of information on this slide. We've got the map where all the schools are. We've got that they went to 86 different schools in Limpopo. And we've got that the schools were categorized into five different categories: the blue, green, yellow, orange, and red. And we'll talk about those in a minute. Thinking about systematic collection of data, this is trying to present information about how they collected the data. How does this slide speak to that systematic collection of data? Anyone? Barbs, go ahead.
Okay, so systematic in the sense that first they decided on which province, and then when they were collecting, they decided on the number of schools and also then categorized these schools into different categories according to Scala. So it shows that there was a systematic process in which they were collecting the information.
Right. So what else would you want to know about 86 schools being the sample size here? Would it help to know how many schools are in the province overall?
Hello, Brian.
Go ahead.
Yeah, of course. Like if I were a researcher, I'd be interested to establish how many schools were.
Can you speak up a little bit? It's hard to hear.
Yes, actually, if I were a researcher, I would be interested to establish the number of schools in this case, the Limpopo. How many schools in Limpopo, and also the divide between rural or urban. How many schools out of the seats? How many schools were in the urban, and how many schools were located in the rural? So that you are able to have the picture. Thank you.
I I see a raised hand as well.
Yes. For me, if I understood well, I'll also consider the level of the schools, whether they are primary schools or secondary schools, and whether they are also, because we are talking about school sanitation, I'll also consider whether they are boarding schools or day schools. Yeah, that will be also one of the criteria for selection. Thank you.
So those are great answers. So if I were to tell you, and I think the important piece on, you know, all of these, so how many schools are there in Limpopo overall? You know, it's a different, how we interpret these data is different, right? If there's, you know, as there are over 4,000 different schools in Limpopo province. So, you know, 86 schools only represents 2% of the total number of schools in the province. Because then you want to ask questions about how were these schools chosen, right, for being visited. What was the urban and rural division between the different schools? The level of schools, I think, is really important, right, in terms of primary school versus secondary school. In terms of how dangerous the toilets may be for different students, and whether they're boarding schools or not affects how big, how many, how often students are going to be exposed to those conditions. So that's, you know, the question about rural and urban, I think also speaks to being representative. So how representative are they in the data? How were these schools chosen? So if I tell you that you know, what is the actual case behind this, which is these were all schools that were listed in a court document after a court case where pit latrines or pit toilets in South Africa had been found to not meet the minimum standards requirements. And Limpopo was required to, in 2014, disclose all of the schools in the province that still had pit toilets. And these data were then collected from the 86 different schools in May and June of 2018. So in terms of reproducibility, what that tells us as well is we got the list from the Limpopo Department of Education. So anybody can actually reproduce that, this methodology, by going to all 86 of those schools again. From that list where the Limpopo Department of Education already said that there are still pit toilets there. So that's, you know, part of how we want to think about reproducibility. It talks to the representativeness. So we're not trying to do a survey here of every single school in Limpopo. We're trying to do a survey of those where these particular issues were supposed to be addressed. And the map speaks to that as well. So a little bit to the urban-rural divide, and as well as whether there's a lot of clustering of whether we were only looking at really one town or one small area of the province as opposed to the province overall. So for the coding system, which I think goes to another issue, if this is the coding system that they said they used, so schools were rated as blue if they fully met the acceptable standards, the standards that are set by the Department of Education. They were green if they were close to compliance with those standards. Perhaps there were one or two toilets too few for the number of students, or missing a bin for disposing of used menstrual hygiene products. They were yellow if they were not in compliance with the ratios of pupils to number of toilets for the school. That's set as the norms and standards regulations. And then they were orange and red if they still had pit toilets or they had far too few toilets per number of learners. Orange was for secondary schools, red was for primary schools. So thinking again about this issue of systematic, representative, and reproducible, what piece does this coding system speak to? Anyone? So if this is all of the information, hello? Oh, go ahead.
I just wanted to comment on the last bullet, which is red or orange or red. The school still had toilet, but again the town says orange for second round, red for primary, and then but doesn't segregate when you go to higher level how you would actually differentiate between second and primary for yellow, green, and blue, because now later on you'd mix up the results if you use that coding. Thank you.
Yep, so that's a different change. Right, so only the bottom category is split between secondary and primary schools. So you can't tell how many of the secondary schools were green versus how many of the primary schools were green. It's a good point. Do you think based off of what's here, you could easily reproduce this coding? For instance, if the regulation said there had to be one toilet per every 50 pupils, how would you classify a school that had one toilet for every 75 pupils?
Green.
Why green?
Because it's close. They haven't met the standards fully, but they've got a small way to go before they meet that standard. If they were to add a few more toilets, it could make a difference. Those are my thoughts.
So that's right. It could also be, in somebody else's interpretation, that that meant there were way too few student toilets per learner, right? One of the problems, at least in what's being shown here, is what their precise cutoffs were for each category isn't really there, right? So we can't easily reproduce all of the methodology of this and get exactly the same coding results. Does that make sense? So the last piece I want to touch on is this piece on photos. So photos are another really powerful way to document as both evidence and as data. So right now, this is a set of 15 photos that we're being presented with. Thinking through what you know from what we've discussed being systematic, representative, and reproducible. As presented, these photos are really evidence of what they found, but they're not necessarily data. And I know we need to close here in a minute, but I do wanna have this very brief conversation about how do you think about knowing our pieces, systematic, representative, and reproducible. How would you turn a series of photos into data? I think photos are one of the most powerful ways that we have to communicate messages, but understanding sort of the approach is really important. So how would you think about turning photos into data? Remembering that data are not just things that can be counted, they're not just numbers, it's the methodology that matters. So what would move these photos from being a category of being evidence or being considered anecdotal to being presented as data?
Hello.
Go ahead.
Yes, I think for the case, for instance, on the issue of representative, You can just check on the how the picture they represent the certain area. So for me, it gives the data that it represents the area that is not well represented in terms of toilets. So, and sometimes even if you can check on the systematically, also you can know how to interpret this picture into the term on how they be systematically on the issue, which is explained there. Yes.
Yeah, others?
Quality?
Go ahead.
Can I say something on that?
Please.
I guess probably, yeah, despite of the evidence to support the data, but I will also look onto the quality, probably the quality of the toilets, instead of just mentioning the number, but one will also look into categorize in terms of the quality of the toilets. Because as you can see, there are different types of toilets from the photos that you have presented. So I'll look into what types of the toilets that are there in the schools. And yes, the type, and also how are they linked to the sanitation? Because there are some which needs water, like flushing toilets, and the others which are the pit latrine toilets. So I'll also try to look into those criteria.
Yeah. I saw somebody raise their hand, but I lost my, there we go.
A comment on that would be that actually the picture would add substance to the meaning of the data that you have collected. So each picture would actually be put into a category that better fits the description of the category that you actually you have on the data that you actually are collecting.
Yeah. So I think those covered it, right? So in terms of, did anybody else have anything?
Sorry, yes, I just wanted to say, I think the pictures also can provide us with descriptive data in the sense that actually giving a description of the type of toilet, or I guess in this case, the types of toilets that we have and the extent to which they are dilapidated. So maybe a bit of descriptive data, that's what the pictures can give us.
Yep. Anyone else? Happy?
Yes. Yeah, on my side, it's like, as first you said, we lose a lot on data on our records. So as the team said, it's first I will put my questions, like what do I want to observe on that area, or the data I want to collect, and then what's the gap on that area so that I can be able to use that data to raise a concern, and what's the main issue or challenge around. So those will be my four specific things, and then I will, like as we see on the toilets, it's like they're kind of 15, and we'll now look on to what's missing on each other from one picture to the other, and then we can raise a concern on that. But then I don't know how we can put that in order. Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah, that's great. So I think this that all hit on all the right points, right? I think, you know, in terms of how do you turn photos into data in the way that everybody just described, the, you know, how are you choosing to show only, you know, these 15 photos? So did you take photos of every toilet at every school? And you can still only present ones that you want, but you can make all of your photos available to say, hey, look, we took photos of every single toilet that we found. And here's the full data set of all of the different toilets. These are the ones that we are choosing to present because they're representative, right? And then somebody else can look at that and say, okay, so here's all the different toilets. Categorizing the toilets, I think that's a brilliant idea. Going through and categorizing, you know, do these have running water? Do they need running water? Are they pit latrines? Are there usable sinks at hand washing stations in every toilet? And being able to then go through and count and utilize that. I think you could categorize by level of dilapidation, right? So going through and saying, you know, we categorized this toilet as failing to meet standards. Here's this photo that documents exactly why we did that, right? It helps add more concreteness, and nobody can really challenge photos, because if they really want to go back and challenge you on the photos that you're presenting, they can go and collect that photo again themselves. And so that's part of the point, is it puts the stress back on documenting, this is how we categorized specifically this school based off of this set of 5 toilets or 20 toilets, right? And why we found this school to be a red or this school to be a green. And it just allows people who want to question your data, or it helps you shore up your data to say that all of this, that this is the basis on which we made all of these decisions. And again, the descriptive data that Hilda, you talked about, I think, you know, that's absolutely right. So this is part of also how we would think about some qualitative data assessments and things like that. So just, you know, people may be interested. So more than half of the schools in Limpopo ended up being classified as orange or red. So we're still operating with pit latrines or pit toilets 4 years after they were banned by the standards and regulations set by the Department of Education. I was going to go through another piece on the 90-90-90 cascade and how we think about this in terms of the HIV landscape as well, but I think, you know, we'll save that for next time. I think this has been a really useful introduction and discussion, but, you know, I think we'll move towards closing here. I don't know if anybody wants to ask any other questions about, you know, some of the things that we covered today already. And again, through the online module, we go into more detail about the types of data that exist, whether it's qualitative and quantitative, how to differentiate between those and the different subcategories of all of that. So there's a lot more in the online module that we'll be discussing as well, or that for the material there. Any other points people want to raise? Great. Well, thanks for everybody for joining. Again, we'll make this module available on the recording of this available on the website. If you have any difficulty getting registered for the course, and if you haven't been already, please let us know after you sign up. Ping myself or Austin, we'll make sure you get enrolled in the course properly. And we will, you know, talk to you either in office hours tomorrow, or we'll follow up next week. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, everyone. Please join next week. We're going to talk about the Global Fund.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
Thank you so much. Bye bye.
Thank you.
Thank you, Brian. Have a nice time. Thank you,
Austin. Thank you. Bye.
Bye bye.
Thanks.